welcome to, once again, Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. I'm Russ Salzberg, along with two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. The number to call, as always, is 201-939-4513, or on Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. So let me tell you how my morning starts after the mess from last night. I don't get to bed till about 2:30, 3 o'clock, because we're wired up.
Yeah.
And that. So my wife sees me, and I'm getting up early. I'm going. She says, "Where are you going?" I says, "I'm going for my run. I got to clear my head and the cobwebs and this and that." So I go for my run, and I go to the same place every morning, and I'm stretching. An elderly woman walks up to me. If I tell you, fans and Dave, she had to be at least 85 years old.
Okay.
So she comes up. She sees me, says, "Hey, Russ. Hey, how you doing?"
Hey, yeah.
She says, I go, "What's your name?" "My name's Ruthie." I says, "Oh, hey, Ruthie, how you doing?" And she looks like the woman. You know that commercial, remember, with the alarm system? "Help, I've fallen,
yeah.
I can't get up." And she looks at me, an oath to God, says, "What the bleep is going on with the Giants?" This is how my morning is starting. And I look at her, and she's got one of those things on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm saying, "What is that?" She says, "Well, that's in case I fall or I'm in trouble. You know, somebody can come get me." And I go, "Well, don't give yourself a heart attack."
Yeah.
Please. I mean, but that's how my morning started. And the horns are honking when I'm on the run, and everybody's talking about the Giants and how bad it was last night. And you know what, Dave? I'm glad you're here, because you're one of the guys from the trenches and a two-time Super Bowl champion. It was bad last night. There's no sugarcoating it. To me, in a lot of ways, it bothered me more than game one, because game one against the Cowboys, I think everybody can come up with, as I said, a stinkeroo. They can just come up with a bad game, the best of teams. It happens to.
Yeah.
But last night, it just looked like a complete disconnect. And as the coaches and the players, as Ben McAdoo said after the game, and the players to a man said in the locker room, because I was there after the game, we just didn't compliment each other. We didn't protect each other. They were discombobulated.
I mean, you really think about what the Detroit Lions came in and did. They took the exact formula that the Giants needed to win this football game. People think Matthew Stafford's going to come in and just try to air it out and do things to open up, because they didn't think they were going to be able to run the ball. He only threw the ball 21 times, and they ran the ball 35 times. What were they trying to do early in the game? Obviously, B.J. Goodson out, Munson in, first-timer, 5 targets, 5 catches for Eric Ebron. What does that do? That settles it up. That spreads people out. It makes you worry about that threat. They started working inside runs, and it was the perfect formula of what Jim Bob Cooter did for the Detroit Lions and their offense, in order to, number one, make sure that they were staying ahead of the chains, but number two, time of possession. First half, they had the ball for almost 20 minutes of the game. That's exactly what they wanted to do. They know that in order to win this football game, they had to wear down the Giants' defense, they had to make them tired, and capitalize on those small opportunities. The Giants yesterday did not do that. You just think about the penalties, how they cost the team. The special teams, that we're not getting return yardage, we're not getting field position to let off a punt return, to have a ball get kicked out of bounds. Thankfully, the Giants defense were able to strip it, get the ball back. But what happened in the next play? Interception by the Giants. Once again, the defense was able to hold up as much as they could. But that sudden change, those switches, are tough to work with when you're on the defensive side of the ball, because here you are, you give your offense momentum and a chance. Sure enough, it's taken right back, and that next drive, the Detroit Lions capitalized on it. And that seemed like the moral of the story for the day. The minute that there was something good that happened, there was that negative play that just ruined it. And in regards to third down, the Giants yesterday on third down were 4 of 12 on third down. You want to know the numbers and the charting of their third downs? Third and 13, third and 28, third and 23, third and 10, third and 10, third and 10, third and 9, third. That's when you can't run the football. This defensive front for the Detroit Lions, didn't have to blitz. All they had to do was rush three or four because you were so far behind the chains that, you know, just like last week, the Dallas Cowboys secondary, we're sitting at a spot. We're making sure that we're not letting you guys get behind us, and you've got to be able to adapt and adjust.
But even so, even before I get to that point, the one thing about in last night's game that hasn't been spoken about a lot, and boy, I didn't realize how nimble he is. You know what?
Matthew Stafford's legs.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. The defense was pressuring him all night, and he just got himself out of trouble all night.
And that's, you know, people don't think about that, Blake, because they're enamored by the numbers, by the passing numbers. But that's how he won all those fourth quarter games, by being able to extend plays
very, very good.
Knowing when to use his arm, but knowing when to take that run and slide. You never see him take a big hit. He learned after hurting his shoulder how many years ago. But that's the thing that really hurt him, his escapability, his ability to use that and make sure that he was manipulating the time clock in order to throw a successful play.
All right, but Dave, even with, and fans, again, the number to call on here on Big Blue Kickoff is 201-939-4513. Even with all the stats, with all the stats that you came up with, they still were in the game and had chances. And that, to me, what was disconcerting, if that's the word, drop balls, as you say, penalties.
Brandon Marshall, you're 6'5". Why are you trying to take it into the basket? That's your strength as a football player. Go up and get the ball at the highest point and make them challenge you for the football.
And to his credit, I will say that, to his credit.
He handled it like a man, a true professional, without a doubt.
A big-time man and professional, because I was right in front of him in that locker room last night.
And it hurt him.
He was very hurt.
Yes.
I let my team down. That was the play of the game. There was 14 minutes and change, almost a full quarter left. It could have changed everything. But then there's Engram number one on his touchdown. You get called for.
Well, that's what you get for over-celebrating. You did it once. They didn't throw the flag. Then you did it again, and you did it again. You're just asking for more opportunities. I don't think it was outrageous.
No, I didn't think it was outrageous.
But you did it once. Let it go.
And then with 4:47.
Well, figure the ball was kicked out of bounds right after that kickoff as well. So they started.
And fortunately, the defense got
was
them
able to
out
get
of trouble.
Yep.
And then I think it was with about 4:47, 4:50 left in the game. It was 24-10. But there's a ball that he should have caught for a touchdown, Engram. If you make that touchdown, you give your defense a chance.
You get life.
That's every time they had a chance for momentum. It wasn't stopped by the other team. It was stopped by themselves.
Without a doubt.
And when Coach McAdoo walked in last night, for as long as I've seen him, you know, be it as an assistant and last night, that was the angriest I've ever heard him. He didn't go on a rant. He just said how he felt. He put it on himself because we got to get this thing straightened out. I'm sure the players heard it. And you know, I'm hearing some people say he threw Eli under the bus because when asked about what happened on the 4th and 2, I don't see it that way, Dave. Now, you're an ex-player. I see it as he was asked the question, what happened? You know what? It was sloppy play by the quarterback on that particular play.
I understand that, you know, but for me, I wasn't a fan of it. Have you ever in Eli's career ever heard him complain about anything? About it, him getting absolutely smacked by the O-line.
There's no bigger fan of the
no running
100%.
Game. So that's why I wasn't a fan of it. I understand. As everybody looking in and as a part of that, as a veteran quarterback, you have to do that. But also, from the sidelines, you have to get the play in. You have to make sure that there's enough time to adjust. So I just don't like it because
you know
when
what's
you're talking
happen.
About, you know exactly what's going to happen. Now we're going to hear about it. Now it's going to be everybody from the outside in looking for a way to divide this football team, starting with that statement right there. But just for me, you talked about it, playing in sync all units. So I understand at that point, but the team lost the game last night, not just that one play. And it was believe me, that was the play of the game.
Oh,
I get it.
Let me ask you this on that play. And first of all, that sequence was as horrific as you will see if that's your team. First and goal at the 1, holding penalty.
Yep.
Quite frankly, I didn't like the pass they throw a pass to here they are at the goal line. They throw a pass across the middle to his shortest receiver, Sterling Shepard, as opposed to
Brandon Marshall.
But then then on fourth and two, and there was some debate. We were sitting up. In fact, I was sitting with Paul Dottino. There was some debate. Should they go on fourth and two, or should they just take the field goal anyway? You know, makes it a 17-10 game. Because if they go on fourth and two and they're stopped, the fans are going to boo. To me, with all the trouble they were having, Dave, I thought at fourth and two, the coach is still telling his team, I got faith in you guys, so go get it done. What do you think?
And that's where that timing of it and getting the play in, and are we going to settle for the – so that's what I mean. I know that people want to look at Eli, and believe me, you've got to get the snap off. But there's a lot more to that. And also, one of the things that, still has to be fixed, third and nine, Evan Engram, you run a seven-yard route. Fourth and three, Shane Vereen, you run a two-yard route. There's timing and precision with the yardage. You know exactly that you need to get to the sticks in order to at least have a chance to fall forward or break that tackle to get the first down. So that's what I mean. When it comes to this week and it comes to now getting ready for this next game in Philadelphia, which we see what type of football team they can be when they're clicking on all
especially
cylinders.
Especially their front seven.
The technique, the fundamentals, and just – the football IQ, the awareness of your down and distances, where you are out on the football field, those things are crucial. And look, those are two catches that could have been first downs if they would have gotten to the yardage, gotten to the chains, and that tackle, you're falling forward, you're getting the first.
Yeah, I mean, Vereen was
what I mean.
Like you say, to me, that's for as long as I'm covering football – you've heard the coaches say you need to know your down and distance. You need to know where you have to go.
Yep.
And like I say, last night, that was the theme afterwards. They were all talking about it, from the coaches to the players. We didn't compliment each other. We didn't do anything for each other. They really self-destructed. And unfortunately, you don't like even to say the third game is a must-win, but call it a crisis situation, because – if you lose, you're not just 0-3. You're 0-3 in your conference
and 0-2
in your division.
Yeah.
And looking at your schedule, you know, three of the next four games are on road, at Philly, at Tampa, home against the Chargers, at Denver.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about walks in the park.
No, and I think anybody who has seen this Philadelphia team knows what they can do on the defensive side of the ball if their offense plays cooperative football with them. I mean, think, they sacked Alex Smith four times this past Sunday. They held Kareem Hunt to only 81 yards. And you just see what they're doing up front in Jim Schwartz's defense. They're playing back to almost the Jimmy Johnson defense of Philadelphia, attacking, aggressive, swarming to the football. And when you watch their interior, their four guys and their defensive ends, it's almost like hockey shifts, because they can go three guys in, three guys out, four guys in, four guys out. Fletcher Cox, Vinnie Curry, Timmy Jernigan, Chris Long, Brandon Graham. That's what I mean. It comes down to this week, starting today, evaluating the film, evaluating tape, getting back down to the X's and O's and the fundamentals of the techniques, and being able to adapt. We heard Sterling Shepard talk after the game. Well, we got a lot of the coverages that we thought we would get, some of the ones that we got in Dallas. Don't let history repeat itself. Then adjust, adapt, and learn from what happened in the past. And it seems like I said, they're still waiting for that one person to make the play instead of saying, put it on my shoulders. I want to be the guy.
All right. 201-939-4513 is the number to call. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines this morning with Bam Bam. What's up, Bam Bam?
How you guys doing today?
What's up, Bam Bam?
I got a feeling you're not doing too good, Bam Bam.
I mean, listen, you know, life goes on. Obviously disappointed, of course.
You don't have to go put on the Flames jumpsuit like Bam Bam Bigelow, though. You don't have to get that
crazy. I'm not going to shave my head and tattoo my scalp. Congrats on last night, Dave.
Thank you, first and foremost.
You know, you're going to get a lot of calls today about personnel. You know, we've beaten that to death. We already know there's issues with some of the personnel up front. But I'm really starting to wonder. I'm 31 years old. If McAdoo is going to be my generation's Ray Hanley, and I know that might sound a little crazy. He went 11-5 last year.
Bam, bam. I'm going to let you talk, but let's time out with that because I lived through the Ray Hanley era. I was there for the Ray Hanley era. If you remember, I got into the controversy with Ray Hanley. Don't even mention me.
Nobody wants a piece of these.
Well, listen, no, I was only 5 years old when that happened, so I don't remember any controversy. But what I mean by that is he's following a legendary Giant coach, and okay. I haven't seen anything. He's an offensive coach, and his offense has failed since he got here, okay? What happened last year on the defensive side of the ball, I give him no credit for that. That is Spagnuolo and better personnel.
And $200 million.
A couple things he did last night, and then I'll hang up. Not calling a timeout at the end of the first half was preposterous. There was about a minute and 20 seconds left. They were kicking a 56-yard field goal. He lets 40 seconds run off the clock. He's got three timeouts. He sat on all of them. This is a guy who constantly talks about being heavy-handed. He gets on the 2-yard line. He's in shotgun four straight downs when you include the fact that they had four downs from the penalty.
Yep.
He never helps with the tight ends or the backs. They're struggling on the line. He never, ever leaves somebody in to chip or block the tackles. He's continuously leaving Flowers out there one-on-one, and he's getting destroyed. And the last thing is, I saw this stat. They've run 104 plays this year. Can you guess how many times they've run the ball two straight times?
Once.
Twice and out of 104 plays.
Yep.
That is preposterous. They're first and tens. They're getting 3 or 4 yards. He's going to 5-step drops on second down. They're getting sacked. And I agree with David, and this will be the last thing I'll say, and I'll hang up. He has gall to call Eli Manning out and throw him under the bus. That guy was winning Super Bowls when he was coaching tight ends for the Packers. Thanks for taking my call.
Bam, bam, thank you. First of all, let me just say this. I respect anybody's opinion. However, that opinion, I'm sorry, is dead wrong. Don't mention in the same breath Ray Hanley and Ben McAdoo because, first of all, Ben McAdoo in his first chance to crack at it was 11-5. Another thing that you just said, $200 million also helped the defense.
Oh, no question.
As well. So let's just be careful on certain things. And as far as running the ball so much, well, let me ask you a question. How are they running the ball when they do get a chance to run the ball?
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. You still have to stick to it. I mean, you still have to, even if you're not getting the big gains that you want, at least, number one, what are you doing? You're able to start breaking down Ziggy Ansah and these other defensive linemen that are playing the run on the way to the quarterback. They're not respecting the run, so at least you can at least beat them up and try to wear them down to take away from their pass rushing abilities. Also, you have to keep this defense fresh. You've got to find a way to manipulate 100%. The time of possession to at least give them a breath. Think about what we were talking about last week. You have halftime. You have this long drive right after half, come up short, settle for a field goal. And from that point on, you could just see the defense's conditioning because they're out on the field that long start to wear. Same thing took place in this game. The Detroit Lions were able to run the football. Matthew Stafford was able to extend plays with his legs, forcing the defenders to run sideline to sidelines, and it broke them down. And that's as much as you say that, oh, well, it's not being successful, you have to stick to running the football because in order to survive and to try to fight the chains, you can't do it.
I agree with that. I'm just saying, you know, like we talk about the hip bones connected to the knee bone.
Yeah, of course.
It's not just with the offensive line, but you know, the passing game has not been great,
Chase. No.
And to me, maybe if that was crisper and tighter and more successful, it opens up for a better running game and vice versa. Listen, it's a collective problem here.
Without a doubt.
There is enough blame to go around, and obviously that's what's being done this morning because last night was a poor effort, and I don't think anybody, including the Giants to a man and the coaching staff to a man, would disagree. Travis from Queens, you're on with Russ and Dave. How are you today?
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
What's going on, Trav?
Hey, nothing. I'm really like upset at I think the blame I would give it to Ben McAdoo, and the reason I say Ben McAdoo is for the preseason, like, Jerry Rice dealt the hand, right? I mean, Jerry Rice dealt the hand.
Jerry Rice
dealt the hand, right? Went 11-5 with it. On top of that, this year, the preseason, Ben McAdoo's job to me was to play the offensive line. Like, play them, like, to the third quarter to see what you really have. The players that you never play in preseason is your star players, or not star players, but the ones that know exactly what their job is. That offensive line needed work from preseason to now. It's too late now in the game to try to shuffle everything, because you're going to have to shuffle now. And last night when he chose to put Pugh at right tackle instead of left, that was mind-boggling to me. I'm like, you got to put him at left tackle and probably move Flowers to right.
Flowers hasn't taken a single rep in the time that he's been here at right tackle.
You're not making that flip. This isn't me talking, this is David. There's no chance
that you're doing that in a game. Justin Pugh has played right guard, right tackle, those positions, something that Eric Flowers hasn't. So if you're going to move those, you got to move one player. You can't move that many.
Right, and that's my point. Preseason was you tested to see if he can do it. Like for them not to even attempt to put him at right tackle, and then I move over to Pat Solari. I don't know what the heck he's doing.
Mike Solari.
On top of that.
Yeah, you're getting your Pats and your Mikes and your Jerrys and your Wads. You're getting a little fired up. We got it. We get where you're going.
Well,
Travis,
I'll answer. I know where you're going, Travis. Go ahead.
Right.
But I completely understand where you're coming from, and I get it. But during the preseason and when we were coming into this, what were you thinking? Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, John Jerry or Fluker, and then Bobby Hart at right tackle
with the competition
with those three, and then seeing if Adam Biznuati can work his way into the mix. Biznuati wasn't ready. He went to the practice squad, and then you saw the mix of those guys. They tried to move Brett Jones. They were trying to – so they've been tinkering with it, but when Bobby Hart went down, you have to move only one player, the veteran – Justin Pugh, who's played that position out there. You can't shuffle Eric Flowers to right, Justin Pugh to left, and then put Brett Jones in at left guard. You can't move three guys. You only got to move one, because if you start moving three, communication, run fits, schemes, you're not going to be able to hold up, especially trying to do it with the next man up in a game. So you only can really move one of those players. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but listen, Travis, this is the hand that you're dealt. This is the hand that they have. There's nobody else coming in. There's nobody in free agency. They're going to have to find a way to work with this offensive line, whether it's to work with another jumbo, get another jumbo tight end to go on the opposite side of Ellison. If they've got to do more schematically where they're trapping and zoning on the backside to try to get these penetrating upfield nose tackles and three techniques to kind of worry about getting hit in the ear hole, they've got to do something to manipulate things up front.
Thank you for the call, Travis. I appreciate it.
Can I ask one question?
Go ahead, quick. Go ahead.
So who would your starting five be?
Well, obviously it depended on Bobby Hart's health, but, I mean, that's we're waiting to see. You have to stick with Eric Flowers at left tackle because there's not another swing tackle. And Chad Wheeler, who they brought in, the free agent out of USC, is not ready. Justin Pugh's the swing guy. Obviously, Weston Richburg is the center. I still don't understand why they didn't have given DJ Fluker at least an opportunity at right guard.
That's a $64,000 question at every
I just, at this point, you have a veteran who's played a lot of football over a Brett Jones who can maul people at the point of attack and move them from point A to point B against their own will. Where DJ Fluker gets in trouble is when he gets tired, and then it's mental, and then he's making technique errors and that stuff. But you brought him in here for a reason. He's a veteran who's played a lot of football. You have to use him.
All right, so let me ask you this. You're the offensive lineman.
Yep.
On two Super Bowl championship teams. It all comes down, or it's all coming down, as it has been for the past year, 2 years, on Eric Flowers.
Yeah.
Is it all on him, or is it a collective group?
No, I mean, it's a collective group all together. We always say the tackles are responsible for the width of the pocket. The guards and center are responsible for the depth. Eli's been getting pressure up the middle as well. You see color flashing from the other team through the middle of the field as well. So it's not just in the outside. But, granted, Flowers is not playing as well as he should be, and he's not made the improvements that I think all of us can say that we thought he would have made by this point. But it's a collective group in this. It's not just one individual player.
All right, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Syracuse and speak with Skip. Skip, how are we doing today?
Hey, good, guys. How you guys doing?
What's going on, Skipper?
Well, I was just calling, saying I'm thinking we need hopefully something like a John Beeson-type trade to come in here and how he helped out as a middle linebacker for the defense a few years ago, because I have no confidence we're going to be able to get anything done with that line personally. And I just wanted to say, I wanted to, you know, kind of defend Eli a little bit because they're all out there already. I don't even know how he makes that throw to Evan Engram late in the game last night.
No kidding.
I mean, that was ridiculous. A ridiculous throw.
You're right. But that's Eli. You know, I've said this, and I'll let you continue, Skip. But with Eli, every time I hear all the complaints, and listen, they all were culpable in last night's mess.
No question.
The coach, the quarterback, everybody. But I go back to what Parcells used to say about Phil Simms when we come in after a game didn't go the Giants' way, and Parcells used to sit smoking his Marlboro at the head table in the old press room at Giant Stadium and say, you know what? Years from now, you're all going to say, you know, that number 11, he was pretty good. That number 11 was pretty good. And you know what? Every time I hear this garbage go on, it's the same thing about Eli. Go ahead, Skip. I'll let you continue.
I was just going to say, I think it's a tragedy that we are really damaging his legacy as far as I'm concerned, what they put him out there with over the last 5 years. All the flashy stuff on paper doesn't mean anything. Obviously, the game's in the trenches. And I would just like to have my question I'd go off the air is, David, I mean, do you really believe that there is actually something that can be coached up out of this? I guess that's a tough spot to put you in because you know these guys. But, I mean, to me, it's embarrassing what we're seeing on these games. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, Skip, thank you.
You know what? Like we were talking about last week, the perception will not change until you give something else out on the football field that is going to change the perception, because it's the same thing happening.
Perception becomes reality.
Exactly. It's the same thing going over and over and over. And if that potential doesn't meet progress, then you're in a tough spot. For this group, technique, fundamentals, their backs are against the wall. What you put on tape, like I always say, the eye in the sky does not lie. What you put on tape, not only is the team that you're playing right now coming up, like the Philadelphia Eagles watching it, but every other team in the NFL is watching it. And they are scheming and they are game planning and they are going to attack your weakness like there's blood in the water until you fix it. As a group, as an offense, as a team, they need to come together and look at each other in the eye and say, when you come into this building, it is strictly about football. None of the other stuff, none of the outside distractions, because nobody on the outside can help us right now. The only people that can help you are the people in this building, the coaches, and the people on that practice field and in that room. So right now, you're in a gut check situation where you better look each other in the eye and know the guy's fighting next to you as much as you are for him, and you better believe in each other, because when it doesn't happen, that's when you start to see tensions fray, and then it goes the wrong way.
You know, I'm glad Skip brought up that point. That pass.
That pass was incredible.
You know what that was like? That was like when he put it in the arms of Manningham. Am I right?
Hit the dime.
That ball was just tremendous. Amazing. But see, that's been the problem. When they do make the great play, when Eli does make the great play, you're having trouble on the other end of it. Or you have drops. And that's what happened last night. Listen, when it was with 14 minutes left in the game, you alluded to it, Marshall drops the ball in a breadbasket. And then with less than, like, just 440, 450 left in the game, they still had a chance. You know, if Engram catches the ball, it's a touchdown. It's a 24-17 game. You give your defense a chance to maybe get the ball back.
You get life.
And they keep as much as the other teams involved, the Giants have spent more time the past two games stopping themselves than the other team has stopped.
And I said this last night, and, you know, obviously I understand Odell's coming off of the high ankle. I understand that he's just coming in fresh. It's his first time. They're asking him, do you feel 100%? In 11 seasons, the only day I felt 100% was the day before training camp. You never are walking out onto the game field feeling 100%.
But he said that. He has said that himself. Yeah. They ask him that.
Yeah. Well, but you never feel 100%. There's always something nicked on you that's bothering you. And for him in the first half to have only two targets, get him the ball. And I don't care if it's just a five-yard little quick inside slant. Make the defense scared that they're going to do something to open up opportunities for other players.
Right.
So the fact that he only had two targets in the first half, that's your guy on the that scares people on defense. When you're on the offensive line, we're looking on the defensive side. Who is the guy that we must protect? Who is the guy that we must be responsible for? That's the same thing that the Detroit Lions would have done if he would have just gotten some more catches. Oh, he's incorporated back in the game. He's feeling better. It makes them hesitate and that one split second think instead of react. And when you do that to a defense, that's when you start taking advantage of them.
Drew from Virginia. Drew, you're on with Russ and David. How are you today, Drew?
Hey, Russ. Hey, Dave. How you guys doing today?
What's going on?
Good. Hey, man, I got first and foremost, man, you know, to give a couple of credits because this game was just horrendous. But I am going to give Brandon Marshall credit for the fact that, because I saw the interview, that he owned up to his mistake.
No question.
Yeah, we've said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just, you know, saying. So, you know, for him to do that, I have to give him credit. I'm not forgiving him, but I give him credit. But, you know, and a lot's been said, so I'm not really going to rehash a lot of stuff, but I do agree with the first caller that McAdoo really, I'm just really not a fan of his.
Hold on, Drew, were you saying this last year?
Excuse me?
Were you saying this after the Giants went 11-5 last year?
You know what? I mean, the Giants won 11-5.
Hold on. Hold on. Stop. You didn't answer the question, Drew. It's a simple yes or no.
Of course. I mean, you know, you always want your team to win.
No. And Coach McAdoo, that's not the question.
Let me answer your question, Dave. All right? Let me ask you, because here's the
thing.
Hold on.
You still have not answered the question, Drew.
Answering your question.
Drew, last year after the Giants went 11-5, did
right.
you think Coach
yes.
McAdoo
well,
is
my, right. I'm answering
no,
your question.
Yes,
I was happy.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to say, yes.
Can I finish my – you're asking me a question. Can I finish my answer?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. I wasn't happy with the way McAdoo was coaching last year. Okay, yes, we won 11-5, but I wasn't happy with some of the things he was doing last year. And again, we won 11-5, and I'm still not happy this year. I just don't think he's head coaching material. I'm not the only one that said that last year.
But Drew, you know, you want to know what? And thanks for the call. Look,
and I wasn't. I mean, I'm just asking
because
a lot of people
that.
Say that. And Drew, just so you know, I'm asking questions and we're debating. This is what you do when you talk sports.
Let me ask you a question. You lived through it.
Yeah.
With the guy who was with the team last night, TC, Tom Coughlin.
Yep.
What were they saying?
Yeah.
What were they saying early on?
I remember
on?
Going 6-10 and 8-8
and
going
what,
through the struggles of it.
What were they
or
saying at the beginning before he won his first? Come on.
We had our obituaries written in the
amen
papers
amen to
us.
That.
No
and,
question.
And then we would an 0-6 start and then a six-game losing. Oh, is it passing him? And it always happens when a team loses. And listen.
And rightfully
it,
so
it
when
comes
you're sitting
with
in
the
0-2,
territory.
Without a doubt. It,
you know, Eli would be the first guy to tell you. Quarterback, any quarterback will tell you that.
I'll take
it. When a team is winning, it's the quarterback. When a team's losing, it's the quarterback.
Yep.
It's the focal point. That happens. Now, no one is absolving anybody here. And Ben McAdoo was the first one vehemently when he walked in last night. You know, before you say, he threw
this
Eli,
one's
anybody
on
says
me.
Eli on a bus, he threw himself on the bus too. It's on me. So let's just be fair about this. But to say somebody is not, you know, head coaching material.
Yeah.
That is a low blow, and I just don't think that's fair.
But in your response, Drew, I get where you're going. I just like having debates like that. That's why you love football. But, I mean, this is one thing that you really think about when you think about the clock going down and the delay of game. Coach McAdoo got the head coaching job. Why? Because of the Giants' offense when he was the head coach or the offensive coordinator were in the top 10 in pretty much every statistical category. Is there too much on his plate?
You know what? I don't know.
That's something that you don't know and we don't know. And, Coach, that's something that we'll see. But there's a lot that has to be handled as a head coach and doing it as an offensive coordinator as well.
Listen, you're the former player, yeah. Not me. I'm watching with a different set of eyes.
No question.
Okay, you're watching from an X and O set of eyes. I'm watching differently. But with all this that we're bellyaching about this morning, and justifiably so, you want to know what? With the coaching one last night, they still had chances.
Yeah.
And it's got screwed up on stupidity.
Capitalize.
On a holding play, first and goal at the one, on drop balls, on when you need, as you said, when you need 3 yards, you get 2. When you need 8, you get 7. When you need 10, you get 9.
Penalties.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Punt return for a touchdown off of missed tackles.
This is what happens when you start out 0-2 and there are big expectations. And we went into this season with big expectations. And you know what? Those expectations are still there.
Yeah.
They are still there. But it becomes a crisis situation. And I don't like to say that going into the third game in a season, but you've already lost 2 conference games, one of them a division game. If you lose this upcoming game, it's 3 in a conference, 2 within division.
And we know how difficult it is to play in Philadelphia and the track record of us there on the road.
Yes. Robert, let's go down to Atlanta and chat with Robert. Robert, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm good. How you guys doing? Thank you for taking my call, man.
Go ahead.
I just got a couple of things I wanted to talk about. I didn't like the way I guess the caller probably mentioned this earlier. I don't like the way McAdoo threw Eli under the bus. I don't think that was right. As a head coach, you should take all the blame. Look at the past head coach. Look at Coughlin. Coughlin never threw Eli under the bus. You guys fail to protect this guy. He has no protection. He's running every play. He's running for his life. There's 2-3 defenders in the backfield trying to tackle him. I'm surprised that he make it out through these games. He walk off the field, you know.
Robert,
I'm surprised at
that. Robert, and I'm going to let you continue, but let's clarify something about the coach's comment last night, okay? He didn't say we need better. He didn't say it was sloppy quarterback play throughout the game. That was not that was said. So let's get it straight. He was asked the question, because I was right there. The question was, what happened on the holding play? Now, whether you like it or not, and I could understand that, well, maybe, you know, Ben shouldn't have said it that way because you know what was going to happen. But he did not say sloppy throughout the game. He specifically answered a specific play. On 4th and 2, with time running out, it was sloppy by the quarterback. That's what was said.
But you're the head coach, though. You're supposed to oversee everything. If you see the clock is going down, you take a timeout. You got a timeout. You can't take the timeout home with you.
And what
are you going to do with it?
And see, this is exactly why, Robert, that I, for me personally, that it should have never come out. Because here we are talking about it, one side of the other. And it just constantly now is going to try to pull people together.
Let me ask you, thank you for the call.
Yeah, but he got his head in the playbook. He can't be calling plays no more. He got his head in the playbook. He's not seeing what's going on in the field.
Well,
so how are you going to be able to call a timeout?
No. Listen, in terms of that, I might not dispute with you about the playbook, you know, Robert, but you can see what's going on with a timeout. Eli's got to be smarter on that play, and Eli said it. It's just I can understand where other people are coming from because now it's on the quarterback, and by saying sloppy play, or you watch what's going to happen for the rest of the week.
That's all you're going to hear.
It's going to be out there that it's sloppy play. He didn't say sloppy play for the game. It was on a 4th and 2 play. And speaking of the 4th and 2 play, let me ask you this. 17-7, it's 4th and 2. Would you have gone for it on 4th and 2? Or tried to go for it on 4th and 2 before the delay of the game? Or would you have gone for the field goal? Because there was that debate.
You know what? For me, I would have gone for it. because you need that spark. Obviously, you've seen in that game that even when they had that opportunity offensively, they didn't overcome that hump, and they needed something. So to sit there and to settle for a field goal when you haven't been driving the football well throughout the entire game, you have to go for the touchdown and the points to not only give your team but to give your defense confidence so that they can go out there and play schematically how they want and have instead of having to be way over aggressive because you're down even more. So I would have gone for it.
I agree with you. You needed something
in that game. Something had to be done, and that could have been the turning point for the game. And one of the things that, like I said, that with the timing and the play calling of it, of why it's not always on Eli, any of those situations, you either go with, we always say it was an alert. Either it's a run, alert, pass, or pass, alert, run, so that you can put yourself in a favorable play. But getting that in and out and getting that into the huddle, when you're sitting there trying to decide what you're going to go for and then you send it in, that's a lot of time when that one split second, like we saw for the delay game, it matters.
Yeah, on the fourth and two, and if to me, if they don't make it, they go for it on fourth and two and they don't
You have them pinned back at least.
You have them pinned back and you're telling your defense, all right, fellas, go. We need you now. Make a stop and we're going to get the ball back in good field position. Let's go out to the windy city of Chicago and speak with Mark. Mark, you're on with Russ and Dave. How you doing today, Mark?
Hey, guys. Doing not so well today, but it is great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to somebody from my hometown. It's the first time I think we've ever had somebody call in from Chicago. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Well, you're not going to like what I have to say. But anyway, I will say one thing, Dave. I called the show several times last year, and I said it is not in Ben McAdoo's DNA to run the ball, establish a power running game. He does not even call two running plays in a row. And let me give you a couple of examples of why I think that is. I actually charted plays last night. The longest run we had, I think, in the game was a 1st and 10 by Darkwa.
Yep.
11
right.
yards.
You're not the only one that charts stuff.
What should you do? You should run the ball
the left.
Again.
Yeah, left
make
run.
The defense react. What happens? Eli takes a sack that was on him. Then Flowers gets a sack, so you're at 3rd and 28. Another example, we're at the goal line, 1st and 2, all right? What does he do? He puts in Perkins, our weakest back. He
Instead
runs
Darkwa,
no fullback,
who is
and he runs behind
forward.
Our weakest offensive lineman. It doesn't make any sense of his play calling and the formations that he brings in. It drives me absolutely insane.
Well, let me say this. And I'll thank you for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
A power running game. Do we have a power running game? Do we have the personnel?
Look at our offensive line. Is that a power running game? No, it is not. They have to stick to it. And I agree with you. I have always been a huge fan of Orleans Darkwa. Why? Because his momentum is always going forward. He's the guy that can make a 2-yard gain, a 4-yard, just because his body language, his leverage, and he's always pushing forward. So I didn't like the call of who they put in on goal line either. Put in your strongest back. Let him get behind the offensive line and scrum the football. And for Brett Jones, we always say as an offensive lineman, at goal line, for him, who's a leverage guy, who's a guy who can get underneath people, at that point, what you always say is score with your defender. All if you can get your defender's feet into the end zone, the push of the running back and everybody else can get the momentum going. But if you don't get that and you get a stalemate and your hands are outside the framework and you're twisting, you're putting yourself in a terrible position and it costs yourself a holding call on the first.
Let's go to Charlie from Portland. Is this Portland, Maine, or Portland, Oregon, Charlie?
Oh, it is Portland, Maine.
All right.
Maine.
I was going to say we're getting all geographical here.
Hey, look, I just want to say last year, actually, McAdoo was 5-5 and Spags was 6-0. That's the way I break down last year. But this year, how many sacks does Eric Flowers – I'm giving you a question. Have to give up in a game before they sit him on the bench. He is not a left tackle in this league. He never will be. When is the cover-up going to end? When are they finally going to say this guy is a bust for a number one pick? Tell me, is it going to be 5 sacks next week and then they're going to sit him? When is it going to happen? When are they finally going to say this guy is not a left tackle?
Charlie, that becomes a $64,000 question, and thank you very much for the call. Look.
Who else is going to play left tackle?
Again, I'm sitting next to an offensive lineman who's got not one but two rings. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long it takes. I don't know if it's a lost cause. I don't know. But to me, how are you going to give up? I mean, I'm just talking from a personnel standpoint. You know, fans, and I get you, everybody's aggravated.
Rightfully so.
And I'll tell you what. I watched Ereck Flowers walk out of the locker room last night. I happened to be walking behind him. Let me tell you what. He was pretty beaten up
himself. Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's a 22, 23-year-old kid. He came into the league at 20 years old. I mean, it gets to you. If you think, like, we're just having fun. When I say having fun, we're talking, we're debating back and forth. He's hearing this nonstop. And I'll tell you, I will say this, to credit to his line mates, a lot of them, you know, Justin Pugh's been pretty vocal about it. You know, stop. It's like not all on him.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. There was pressure up the middle. It's not all on him. And it's
– No one's absolving his play.
It's
okay?
Just – but the concern, like anybody, here we are through the first 2 weeks, 9 sacks when they allowed 21.
Think about that.
All of 16.
Nine in two games.
In two games.
Let me ask you this. And again, I think it becomes, you know, you're trying to make something happen. I thought of the 5 sacks last night. There was one.
One was a coverage.
One was definitely coverage where Eli maybe held the ball too long.
Yep.
It was there was some back-to-back sacks. And it was the front end of that. But it is what it is. So let's go to my old hood, Brooklyn, and speak with Lisa. Good morning, Lisa. Good afternoon. Happy lunchtime, whatever.
Good morning, Russ. How are you?
How are you, my dear?
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm great, Lisa. How are you?
Good. Longtime Giant fan. 35 years. I love my blue.
Love it.
I have to say it because I'm so angry. I couldn't sleep last night because I own a preschool in Brooklyn, and I'm a leader of a lot of children.
Where's the preschool? Where in Brooklyn?
It's in Kind Star Preschool, 7702 New Utrecht Avenue.
We used to hold
giant rallies here. We had something called a stomp.
Right.
And when you guys won the Super Bowl, we used to stomp every single Friday. And you guys would win, David. And we had the news here and everything, and you guys sent us packages and pencils. So we're all Giant fans here in Brooklyn on New Utrecht Avenue.
All right.
Love to hear it, Lisa.
Okay, but I'm very upset with Ben McAdoo. And I'm not going to talk about his game calling, and I'm not going to talk about that he should just coach and not game call. He is a leader. I happen to love my Eli Manning. That man never puts anyone under the bus. And I know, Rush, you said that he said it was one play, and I agree.
That was the play.
Right, but when you do it with the media... Do you know what's going on all over Twitter? All I hear from everyone is how he's throwing his player under the bus. He should have knew better.
Lisa,
to rephrase the way he said that.
Lisa, I would agree with you, my dear, but understand this. Whether he said it and he knew what was going to happen, the point was it was about
the
one
delay
play.
Of game.
He was specifically asked, what happened on 4th and 2, the delay of game? He was not asked, what's the problem with why is your offense this way? And he didn't answer in
it
response
was on a
to that.
Specific
it was sloppy
play.
Play. That was the specific situation. Whether you know what? It was sloppy on the quarterback's point, but you're right. That's the way it is, and that's the life of Twitter. It blows up in 35 seconds.
Makes mutiny. It's just not right. You don't do it with your players.
Well, the way
Eli would never say, you know, it's Coach McAdoo who keeps making me get sacked every minute by a left tackle who's not doing his job.
Lisa, I understand where you're coming from, but remember this. When Ben walked in, well, he walked right up to the microphone, first thing out of his mouth, and that's as angry as I've seen him in his time as head coach and as assistant on me. It's in other words, he was not blaming anybody else before he blamed himself. And people have to remember that. I listen, the media is going to write on this. The fans, Twitter is going to write on this. There's no mutiny. There's no division in that locker room.
And I guarantee Eli is not losing sleep or flinching over it.
No. I mean, he's a big boy, and it comes with the territory.
And Eli, as always, is an accountable football player, and he knows that he has to get it off as well. So it is what it is, and yes, that's going to happen. You're always going to get – they're going to take one quote of it. You're right. Not going to hear the question of it. You're not going to hear the full sentence, and it's going to get thrown out there.
That's what's going to happen. But Lisa, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa. Keep stopping them out over there in Brooklyn.
I still believe in you guys, Blue. I don't think we're done by a long shot.
All
we
right,
still
Lisa.
We got life.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you very much. You know, you and I were talking off the air before we went on this morning. And we were kicking it back and forth about the comment. And as soon as I heard the comment,
You knew right away.
Boy. And listen, if you don't like the coach saying that, that's fine. But what you can't do, not what you shouldn't do, what you can't do, you can't make it something that it wasn't. He was not asked about the overall play or what's happening with your game plan. He was asked about a specific play.
Not to mention, the one thing that I will always say is some of the fans are overcritical of Eli in the same manner. And I get that it's the head coach, and I get that where it's at and the magnitude of what it's brought. But those same people who are saying, I can't believe they said it, some of those same people are the ones that have been crushing Eli for years.
Come on. Or Eli.
So I get, and like I said, I get where everybody's coming from, and I get where it's at and when it was done, considering the fact that they were 0-2. It's magnified, and you could say whether he wanted to say it or not. But the only way that they can turn things around are together, the entire team. And I know that this isn't going to separate them.
BC, how you doing? You're on with Russ and Steve.
Hey, I'm doing
Steve.
All right. Dave, congratulations on a wonderful night last night.
Thank you, BC.
You're very welcome. I have a number of things that are crushing me today. Our wide receivers can't get open, and they don't seem to know where the first down marker is. Our offensive line is not tough nor physical. And we don't make any adjustments at all for that. No chipping for Mr. Flowers to help him out. Earlier on, Dave, you were talking about the quarterbacks of the Lions making a lot of, improvisational runs to extend plays.
Yeah.
And yet they don't put a spy on them this game. It kills me.
Well, I mean, we're talking. You're not going to spy a Matthew Stafford. That comes to rush and lane discipline compared to anything. And that comes down to making sure that you cover. Because, I mean, if you really start doing that and you really start putting somebody, it's not a Cam Newton. It's not a Russell Wilson. And I get where you're coming from about, but you're taking away from your ability to play coverage by having one guy spy. And not to mention, what don't you get? You don't get that push that you want up front.
Yeah, but listen. You got to give a heck of a lot of credit to Stafford. We opened up the show by talking about, and thank you for the call. We opened up the show by talking about his feet. You knew what I was going to say before
I brought
it up.
Because everybody knows him for his arm. Goodness. But like I said, those fourth quarter wins like he had last year came a lot of the time because he didn't have the best offensive line, but he was able to adjust and move and change the launch point to extend plays.
And again, it's kind of – it's close but no cigar, if you will. There were times when the defense just about getting him, and he would elude. And then I'll tell you something else. You know when I knew it was going to be a bad night? When you got a 56-yard field goal bounce off the crossbar and bounce the right way.
Bounce the right way.
I mean, it's all bouncing against the Giants, and it's all bouncing for the opponent at this after two games anyway. It's really – listen, Dave, you've gone through it.
Yeah.
You've gone through it, and I've watched your locker room go through it. I was in there talking with you. It's no one's ever happy. But don't be talking. First of all,
there's a lot of football left to be played.
Somebody, to say that a guy is not equipped to be a head coach and to say he's in the same breath as Ray Hanley is flat out stupid. That is ridiculous, and it's an unfair assessment. That is just not right. I said it last week. They pulled the stinkeroo. Yeah. They pulled the stinkeroo last night.
Yeah.
So you know what? They better come up smelling like roses in Philadelphia.
But it is changeable. It is correctable because, like you said, they still had opportunities, even with all the negative plays, to still win this football game and capitalize.
Well, that's the thing.
They still had chances, and we know that. Look at it. It looks bleak. 0-2. The world is ending. Everything. But they can change and correct things. They can get things done. But it, number one, it takes accountability, and two, belief that they can do it.
When this happens, I mean, like you've gone through rough times. You went through rough times. When this happens, what is the attitude amongst the players? Like, okay, you had a lousy game on Sunday or Monday. What is the attitude? How long does it linger when they come in? When they come into work on Wednesday, is it done and let's go, or does it fester? And especially because, you know, this garbage about we never read, we never hear, we never watch. Everybody reads, hears, and watches everything.
Yeah. No, you're game planning for the next week. You're getting ready, but also you know that you have to make corrections from the week before, and you know that you're going to hear what happened on those certain plays. So that's never going to change. But you know that you have more opportunities. Learn from it and move forward. And the thing that we win or loss that we used to do, which I know a lot of guys still do on this football team, we would watch the film as a group, as no coaches. We would watch it as a offensive unit. And if it's a technique thing and you get beat, that's going to happen. You're playing in the NFL. But when you have mental errors, when you have undisciplined play and you're not playing in harmony with the rest of your teammates, it is one of the worst things to sit there and watch the film and do it in front of one of your peers.
This is just a personal assessment, but I just, in my all my time watching in locker rooms, not just the Giants locker room, but I'll say specifically you guys, I find that the offensive line, they're the most close-knit unit in general on
without
a team.
Without a doubt.
Is that?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because all five guys have to play in sync with one another. You're not rotating. There's not other people coming in. Your footwork in a double team or your movement as on slide protections on the left side make a difference with the way that they're going to react the next time on the right side. So you really have to know set-wise where everybody's at and communicate across the board. So it's a lot different than any other position.
How much time we got left here? We got time to take a couple of calls?
Oh, okay. 3 minutes.
You know what, Pete? You've been hanging on in Florida, so let's get to you. Can't make it too much. Make your point, my friend.
Pete? All right. This is a question. I want to start off by saying I agree with Lisa. Eli Manning is definitely the man. Okay. But I seen a sack last night that I think Eli sacked himself. I'm trying to figure out where that quarterback that escaped five Patriots and threw the ball down the field is at.
Well, you got to remember something, Pete. Thank you for the call. That offensive line that included this fella right here.
Blocked absolutely nobody on that play?
That was a little better of an offensive line. But, look,
here we are talking about it.
The
only thing like that we always say that we've always thought, only thing that's going to cure all of this is vitamin W winning. It takes away all this, and believe me, we all know the magnitude of this game. We all know the magnitude of where they are in the football season, but it can turn around. It can change, and it is correctable things that you see on film. But like I said, it's going to come down to fundamentals and execution and technique this week in practice. Getting back to the basics and, more importantly, believing in what you were trying to do cohesively out there and playing in sync together. And they can do it. I do not doubt it. They can do it, but it takes one play, one step at a time.
Well, let me ask you this. How difficult is it? And, listen, you celebrated a Super Bowl last night.
Yeah.
Your team started 0-2.
Yeah.
And it was an ugly 0-2.
I told you, we all had obituaries, including Coach Coughlin.
It was an ugly 0-2. They wanted to hang Spags. Yeah. What the hell is this guy doing? They gave up 80 points in the first two games, and it was 17-3 at halftime in Washington before you regroup. But you're at a point now, the team's 0-2, and as I call it, a crisis game.
Yeah, your back's against the wall.
how difficult is it for a team to know, here we are playing in our third game of the season and we got a crisis situation? Do they sense the enormity of the game?
You know how important each and every game is, and you know how important each and every division game is for you as a football team. So you understand where you're at. But like I said, we were in this position before more than once, and when your back's up against the wall, you have one choice: to work, punch the clock, grind when you're here, and come out swinging, and make sure that you're coming out swinging together as a football team so they can do this.
Finally, before we close up, let me also ask you this. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out why this has happened, because nobody expected this to happen. I'm not saying the players have done this. I'm not saying the coaching staff has done this. Has anything been taken for granted where they think, we're good, and it should come easier than it is coming?
No.
Okay.
No.
That to me, I wasn't sure. I just don't know. This is obviously, folks, everybody is surprised about the situation. And I can tell you this, as upset as the fans are, as upset as the coaching staff is, as upset as ownership and management is, trust me, I can tell you this.
The players feel it.
Nobody is more upset than the players. Whether you like them or not, whether you think they're good or not, nobody is more upset than the players. Now it's up to them. They put themselves in this mess. It's up to them and the coaching staff to get themselves out of this mess. For David Deal, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thanks so much for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. Again, the number is always 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is #GiantsChat.
Get involved.
And I will see you again right here tomorrow.